हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 77. A Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra can perfect his occupational duties only by rendering service unto the Lord. A Brahmana is supposed to know this fact due to his perfection in Vedic wisdom. The other sections are supposed to follow the direction of the Brahmana Vaishnava, one who is a Brahmana by qualification and a Vaishnava by action. That will make the entire society perfect in regard to the order of its social construction. A disordered society cannot satisfy either the members of the society or the Lord. Even if one is not a perfect Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, but takes to the service of the Lord, not caring for the perfection of his social order, he becomes perfect, a perfect human being, simply by developing the attitude of service to the Supreme Lord. So that service, that's your main thing that you're trying to attack. If that's in place, then everything else is perfect, because the varnas themselves are for the purpose of service, right? The ashrams, the varnas, it's for, that's what varnashram is for, is how to perform, you know, dharma in connection with the Lord, right? Dharma is there, it is dharma, but the idea is that this dharma should be done to please Krishna, right? As mentioned here. Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra can perfect his occupational duties only by rendering service unto the Lord. So you can't be perfect, actually a perfect Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra unless you're rendering service to the Lord. Right? So, but in that process, then making that endeavor, then that becomes perfect by its connection to the Lord, and by the technical points, it also becomes good. But if it's only technically good, then it's no special thing. Duryodhana did well as a Kshatriya. But as a devotee, he didn't get any marks, right? He's, you know, very below standard, right? So that's why it's not considered that so special. And if you're saying, no, but we're doing it for Krishna, it's the doing it for Krishna part that is special. That one's perfect in material duties, actually that's not so special. There's so many people that are doing that. It means they think, I'm a good manager. There's 33 million demigods that are perfect managers. Right? So it's not that unique. But being pure devotee, now that's unique in the universe. That's something special. So we have to catch that that's how specialness works. Right? Then the duties, naturally, since it's for Krishna, that's why you want to perfect your duties, not because perfecting the duties is special. So that then the brahmanas should know by their study of the scriptures, that it can teach to the others. Right? Others know by their practice of devotional service, good. If they don't, then this would be to give that direction. Okay, Adhikarna. Yeah, you had something?
No, it's like...
A little louder.
You just said, one who is a Brahmana by qualification and Vaishnava by action.
Yes.
The spirit Vaishnava.
Means he's able to perform the Brahminical activities, right? Performing the Brahminical activities, then that's something that others can relate to. But the whole point of relating is what you'll gain from the Brahman. So if the Brahman is a devotee, a Vaishnava, then you can actually give real knowledge and understanding and practice to others. Does that make sense? But the Brahminical lifestyle, that's perfect for teaching. Because otherwise, then, in the political field, you're dealing so much with politics, you may tend to, that may come over into your life, or you're dealing so much in economics and profit, that might come into your life and dealings, or you're dealing so much in your skill and your art and your feelings, and that may come all over into. So that's why the Brahminical, that position, then everybody can accept that. Others, then they may like. A manager. Some like him, some don't like him. But if you have a good Brahmin, basically everyone likes, because there's no threat. Does that make sense? So that's why that position is the best for teaching. Any position you can serve Krishna. So therefore you see even in the Sri Sampradaya, then I'm not sure if it's one of the Alwars, you know, who are all eternal associates of the Lord, then they take the position of a Shudra. Right? So the whole point is one can learn from anybody, but if one's a Brahmin, everybody will accept. But if you're a Shudra, it's not that the knowledge won't be just as good. The tendency is some will accept, some won't accept. Does that make sense? Narottam Das Thakur is from a business family. So some people wouldn't accept. Does that make sense? Or Hari Das Thakur, you know, some don't accept. But you mentioned, you know, Rupa Sanatan, they're from, you know, Gaur Saraswat Brahmins, Bharadwaj Shaka, it's like that. There's not a person within the Vedic system who would not respect that. You know, that group is like even like the Brahmins of the Brahmins. You know what I'm saying? So it's already, your Saraswat Brahmins, that sticks you up there above others. Gaur Saraswat above that, and then Bharadwaj Shaka above it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole. These things is just, people care about that. And so, therefore, then, you know, we can say, oh no, but that's so materialistic, you know, like that. You know, but we're not being materialistic when we say we're Westerners and we got to do Western stuff, right? You know, but if Indians say, oh hey, you know, we're this, oh, that's so material. You know what I'm saying? So the point is conditioning means you think materially. Therefore, the Brahmin position and all that, that works the best. Does that make sense? That's why it's recommended. Not necessarily that it's other, but that there, the lifestyle, the commitment to everything, you have more time for that. You know, if you're busy in your business 12 hours a day, how much time do you have for studying, teaching, preaching, like that? Not that you don't have the realization, it's just there's less time to put in. While the Brahmin, then all they do is those kind of activities. So it just makes it more accessible and more, just it socially makes it easier. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Adhikarana 9. Cause of trembling. Kampanadhikaranam. Sutra reference 1, 3, 39, and 40. Adhikarana Prakashita. Now that this digression is concluded, right? You know, this digression into the Shudra and who's qualified and not. The Sutrakara again returns to the original topic in this Adhikarana. In the present Vishayavakya, drawn from Katha Upanishad, the specific word in question is Vajra. In conventional usage, this means thunderbolt, yet in this context refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Due to this, Vajra's making the entire universe tremble. Okay. Yeah, so it wasn't the rolling on the ground in ecstasy tremble what we're talking here. Okay. Some of Adhikarana 9, but he does that also. Right? Vishaya, in the Katha Upanishad is read the following passage. When it breathes, all the manifested word trembles in fear. They who know this thunderbolt become immortal. Shamshaya, does the word Vajra here mean thunderbolt or the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Purvapaksha, because the Vajra here causes trembling, and because the description of liberation attained by understanding this Vajra is merely a collection of meaningless poetic words, the word Vajra here should be understood to mean thunderbolt, right? So here you see, as they're using that thing, they don't understand it, they can't catch the context, And so therefore they just say it's just meaningless words. Why would they say that about Vyasa? And then they're going to be following Vyasa, so it's not good. So we can see as the for material purposes people can even give up this you know, proper respect for the Acharyas. Right? For these reasons, because the word prana here does not mean breath, but protector. In this passage it is not possible to say that the word vajra means the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because the phrase udyatam vajram, raised thunderbolt, contradicts the second interpretation. The word vajra must mean thunderbolt. Siddhanta, the conclusion follows, kampanat, because the entire world trembles, the vajra must be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right, so
there's no connection.
Which?
Siddhanta.
No, because in here, the Siddhanta, this is an opening. Remember, this is the Prakashika. So it's showing that the answer is this sutra. You understand? So that means that's how they do Sangati. They've finished a point, made the Siddhanta. That will create another problem. Right? Then they'll bring out that problem and say the solution is this, and then that becomes the next sutra, and then and that's answered, and then that will create. So you just have that progression.
And when they say the Purvapakshi, when they say that thunderbolt, this vajra means thunderbolt, the thunderbolt seems to belong to somebody, so it belongs to the Supreme Lord.
No, they're saying the thunderbolt itself is the Supreme Lord. We're dealing with Upanishads here. You understand? Remember the discussion yesterday? Mm-hmm. You know, we told a nice story. Right? So this is how it works. This is how the Upanishads and the Vedas work. These are what the stories are like. Because in the term means in Sanskrit, in the language, then you have the section of Nirukta, which we would translate as, you know, vocabulary or lexicography or like this. So then, the Vedic meaning is what's the obscure meaning of this word. They don't generally use direct meanings of the words. Means not direct. They use direct meanings. They don't use necessarily conventional words.
So they don't use nirukta as such. But they do.
No, nirukta means that. The word nirukta means obscure meanings. So that's why then, you know, it's just like in Narayana Upanishad, it talks about the Lord sits in the Sika. Right? So the common usage means the one on the top of the head. Right? But in obscure meaning, it means the heart. You know? Like that. So that's where he sits, because we know in other scriptures it says he sits in the heart, and so there if it says Sika, then you know it doesn't mean he sits on the top of the head. We don't go, oh, but here it says he's in the heart, there he says he's on the top of the head, I'm confused. No. It's that Sika can also mean that, though generally it's not used like that, so therefore since this says in the heart, then this must also be that. So that's what Vyasadeva is pointing out here, is that because of the context and all this, then it's there. Because if the thunderbolt is there, thunderbolts, things makes things happen. It's the energy. It's all that. So he's the energy of everything. Does that make sense? And through that he protects, he does all this. So then they're using this. Okay. So he's saying from this, it doesn't mean breath, it means protector and this and that. So we have to be very careful of not using that same kind of logic. You know, we'll come up with verses and then we'll say, oh, can't mean this, it has to mean that, because I understand that. I don't understand actually what it's talking about. But that's the point, without devotion, it may not be revealed. So we have to be very, very careful in these kind of things.
Maharaj,
yeah.
So in the case of niruktas, it is necessary that we should reference different passages which have a connection and then come to the actual meaning of it.
Yes, you'd have to see the context. That's what Vyasadeva is always saying.
Yeah. So, there are particular rules to it. Like, how do we go about that? because...
I mean, you see what's being discussed, and then see it there. It's not that it's suddenly changing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just it uses different words.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like, okay, the father is saying to his, you know, young daughter, you know, he refers to her as pumpkin. So, does that mean she's a vegetable? And most people don't like pumpkin. You know, so is this now, not only she's a vegetable, but now it's an insult, because it's, you know, why didn't she say, oh, my dear Corella? You know, or if you're in, you know, other parts of the world, oh, my dear durian, you know, like that, you know, something, yeah. Does that make sense? So the whole point is what's the context? So you see that, then it has meaning. You know what I'm saying? So language has that. So that is the intellectual aspect here. It's the intellectual aspect of the intelligence, not the intellectual aspect of the mind. So the classical will use the cleverness within the field of the mind. The Vedic will use the cleverness in the field of the intellect. It's not that in the mind, it's not that intelligence is not it's appreciated, but it has to have that poetic and practicalness.
Mm-hmm.
Here it's just the obscureness, so that uniqueness or difference, or wow, I never thought of it that way, that kind of a thing. And that's what's special.
Because we have consistently seen throughout, you know, that... whether they're impersonalist or whether they are in the nonsense, they are using, you know, the mind, not the actual...
Yes, of course. Because, yes, they're using the mind, not the intelligence. I mean, they're playing in the field of the intelligence, but according to the taste of the mind, because they want to be God, so the impersonalist. Is that... Yeah.
So, Nirupta is... this obscure meaning generally, like, you know,
that's in Vedic.
In the Vedic,
yeah.
So basically Nirupta is to define about the Supreme Lord, like,
means the whole Veda is to describe the Supreme Lord. And so if we're looking at, like, before Prabhupada was talking about in the purports that Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, everything is Krishna, so there's nothing that's not, so you can experience him in everything. And experiencing him, then whether it's positive or negative, it's always nice. Because it's Krishna who's coming as that. Does that make sense?
The common words which come out is actually based on some potency of the Lord.
Yes.
And then because of the common usage, that meaning becomes a very prominent.
That's why the Vedic Sanskrit is different. That's why not everybody's supposed to deal with it, because then they'll make the... See, is that it's not that in classical you don't try to use unique words, but it'll have that particular poetic. Well, here the unique words have that intellectual, makes you think, the how is he the thunderbolt and this and that. You know what I'm saying? So There's a slight difference in how it's done. Both of them are trying to do something special, but it's just how it appeals. That's the point. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. So. This process we have to be very careful about is that we don't understand it, so we interpret the word differently and things like that. Sutra 1339, Kampanat, because of trembling. The thunderbolt is Vishnu because he causes the words to tremble. Remember, the passage is from the Upanishad, Sri Govinda Bhashya. Completing an incidental topic, the main topic now continues.
Marriage.
Yes.
Yeah. So, usually it speaks about the incidental topic. So, it's not a question, it's a statement. So regarding the different sanghatis, you know, like an adhikaran you have in a father, after the six, you know, the demigods and the shudra, they were referring to this particular prasangi drishtantam. And usually what we follow throughout was akshara.
But you use whatever, that's why there's six different kinds of sangati.
Yeah.
So you can use whichever one works best in the situation. So because one is used more, that doesn't mean that something else is not special. Just like, okay, all year you get bananas, right? Right? So does that mean we complain when it's mango season? Mm-hmm. You know, there's 2-3 weeks where there's some nice mangoes and we complain, but we always have bananas. You understand? So that's the whole thing. That's why there's six, because these are the six different ways it's used. Now the main thing is when you do, then if you use something so much, it becomes common. So we're saying that the common thing is there, just like in music. One of the, big musicians was explaining that when you have the something unique, some combination of notes, it's within the context of the mathematical arrangements that you can have with the notes. But of them, they're nice, but this is really special. Right? So he made the point is, you in a performance of, 1 hour, 2 hours, like this, you can only use it a few times. Because if you use it more, then it becomes common. So it's not special. Does that make sense? So that means, but you still have to function within music. So therefore, the main body is what's the more conventional. And that's done in a very nice way. But then now and again, you add these in. Does that make sense? Or also the rule is like, when you're singing in music, you have the standard tune and then you have the higher part. So the rule is you'll use the higher part less than you'll use the main part. Otherwise, then how do you know which is the main part? Or in Vastu, let's say, okay, you can extend the west and the east and the northeast, right? So now, if I take two squares, equal squares, and put them so that that east and all that means the northeast, that whole side is extended. But it's the same size as the main body. How do you know, is it the northeast is extended or is it the southwest is extended? You understand? Or neither extended, your southeast and your northwest are missing. You understand? So that's why then these things are used less. So when you say is that there's six kinds of sangati and you see that, one or two of them are used more of the time, that's the standard way. It works. It works for everything. But in certain situations, then you need to use a different kind to make the point. Therefore, saying? Just like, the person comes late and all that, and then you say, oh, so nice of you to be on time. It really sets the example. This is what people really need. People are looking for this kind of thing. Thank you very much. And then, yeah? Okay. So is that something you use all the time? No. People say you're snarky. Right? But you use your general thing, and then if this is used, then there's nothing to say. But if you always use snarky, then they have something to say it every time you say something. Is that anything? Yeah. Okay. Completing an incidental topic, the main topic now continues. Vishaya. It is said in the Katha Upanishad, the universe emerges from prana. It is a raised thunderbolt, vajram, which causes great fear. Those who know it become immortal. Right? So the point comes up is that by knowing what a thunderbolt is, you become immortal. Right? So that's the whole thing. If they're saying, when the verse says Indra, and it means the demigod Indra, not the Supreme Lord, then how is it remembering Indra? Well, you know, make you immortal, right? By what we're saying, it'll make you immortal, but what they're saying, it won't. So why would they say is they're not looking the whole thing, right? So therefore, because they can't understand it, therefore they start using obscure meanings, you know, to explain it so that it makes sense to them. Shamshaya, the doubt is this: is the Vajram a thunderbolt or Brahman? Purvapaksha, the word Vajra means a thunderbolt because it causes trembling and because liberation is caused by knowledge of it. It is called prana because it gives protection. From the context, it is not possible to take the word to mean Brahman. Udyam Vajram, a raised thunderbolt, cannot indicate Brahman since Brahman is without motion. Siddhanta, Kampanat, the thunderbolt is Vishnu because he causes the world to tremble. Because the trembling of the whole universe is mentioned along with the Vajra must be Brahman. In the Smriti scriptures it is said, the Lord is called Chakra because he moves like a wheel. He is called Vajra because he goes everywhere. He is called Khadga because he cuts. Thus the Lord is named because of his weapons. Brahma Vaivarta Purana. So here the Vajra then is his all-pervasive aspect, which is Brahman. But they're not understanding that meaning of Vajra. The meaning is this: it is well known in the Shrutis that Paramatma is called Prana and the cause of fear. Thus Vajra means Paramatma, who is glorified by this word. Right, so in other references, then Prana is known to be, so that matches Lord, and Vajra then all-pervading, so then these things, he is the life force of the universe, and he is all-pervading in the universe. Therefore, why that wouldn't be Brahman? Is that?
No. What's the thinking
from? Oh, okay. Bhagavatam verse reference. Because the whole world trembles in fear of the Supreme Lord, who regulates all living entities, he is called Vajra, the thunderbolt. Right? Because you hear that even in dealing and all that, you have the rose and the thunderbolt. Right? So that's for regulating the sweetness and then the strictness. So here that thunderbolt means that strictness is there. It's not just here and there, it's like all pervading. You know, I say, if someone's a good manager, like that active, then they know everything everywhere, and you think they're all pervading. You know, with here in Mayapur before, with the management, then no one felt safe doing anything that was they weren't supposed to do, because they knew the management would know. You know. Like that. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:10, 13-14. Thereafter, King Indra very firmly took up the thunderbolt manufactured by Vishvakarma from the bones of Dadichi, charged with the exalted power of Dadichi Muni, and enlightened by the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Indra rode on the back of his carrier, Airavata, surrounded by all the demigods, while all the great sages offered him praise. Thus he shone very beautifully, pleasing the three worlds as he rode off to kill Vritrasura. Then, 6:8:32.
What this verse wants to prove?
Because where's the power of the Supreme Lord? So with that he'll be able to.
Because it says that Indra was enlightened by the
Ayud is called Vajrayu. His that thunderbolt is called Vajrayu. That is the reference.
Yeah.
I understand.
No, but at the same time, is this the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? That's what makes it work. So it's on his order that this is working. It's being made, and it's through his potency, then therefore it has that ability.
So it wants to prove that even if it refers here to the thunderbolt, it still should be...
No. Because what we're referring to here is not the thunderbolt, we're referring to the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
That's what I understand. But in the present context, when
yes, but that's what we're showing. Is the potency of Vajra is the Supreme Lord. So therefore, what he's wielding is that authority of the Supreme Lord. And Vajra can go everywhere, so the Supreme Lord's potency is everywhere. Just like if there's no space, you can't extend something into it. So everything rests on space. So the Vajra and all these other aspects, they only function because of resting on the Supreme Lord. Right? So the weapon, you know, chakra does what it does because it that potency of him moves like a wheel. He's everywhere. It's all. Does that make sense? It's just like the Kala chakra. Time, it's circular, goes around. That's why it destroys everything. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of seeing, like what Prabhupada was talking about before, is that the pure devotees don't exactly see the material world. They see the Lord. Right? Because of his non-dual existence. But it's not that they can't see the variety in the Lord. But the point is they're seeing the Lord, not the items themselves. This is where the distinction comes up between, but I'm using it for Krishna, and, you know, and actually seeing it in connection with Krishna. In other words, I see it not in connection with Krishna, but the result of it is for Krishna. In other words, I'm using some endeavor, and the result of that is for Krishna, which is perfect. But the level of understanding is, I think that this thing is acting in its own capacity. It will generate the result. That result then will be offered in devotion to Krishna, which is not a fault, because it's being offered to Krishna. But it's not being seen as that what they're dealing with, the elements that they're dealing with, are Krishna. The action itself is Krishna. That action gives that result, that's Krishna. Right? And Krishna is that process of bhakti. So all we're dealing with is Krishna. You'll look at it slightly different. If I think it's, okay, I'm manipulating this particular material aspect of material energy and getting this result, you know, so I have my knowledge, my skills, I have my abilities, I'm doing it for Krishna. That's good. But it's not on the same level of that all that is Krishna, so I'm not manipulating it. I'm simply taking part as an instrument. So it's the Lord's potency that actually creates the transformation, not me. And so therefore the Lord can do that transformation on his own. He doesn't actually need us to do it. Right? So, you know, just like we're thinking, I'm doing this, why doesn't Krishna help? Okay, so let's say he does do it. You know, you're trying to go and get the big man to agree and sign the paper, and there's been a problem, so suddenly now, you know, the paper's signed. Right? So now if we look at it, if we're emphasizing that, yeah, okay, now see Krishna is helping like that. But if we look at it, then does Krishna actually need us? No. That's why we like the service, that's why we don't mind the difficulty. Because then we're connected with something. Right? So that's the whole point, is that then we're seeing is that we're simply the humble servant, and that's why the point of our duty. No, but it's what I want to do and what I feel and all this. And great. But what about Krishna? That's the whole point. So when we're talking about pure devotion, so we're talking about that aspect. These other layers that we're at, those are correct as long as your end game is it's being done simply for Krishna's pleasure. So that means you see it in connection with him. Right? Why does Krishna manifest Braj? What's the purpose? For his pleasure, but what's his pleasure? Therefore, that nice place is for the devotees. He's Atmarama. He already is Braj. It already is him. So he doesn't have to manifest it for his own pleasure. So he's manifesting it for a nice environment for the devotees to interact, because it gives the opportunity for them to interact with him. then their pleasure in that, that gives him more pleasure than the Atmarama. So it's taking part in, so he's thinking about Krishna, the devotees in all situations. Like when Krishna and Balaram are enjoying the beauty of the forest, you know, it's a chapter that will come up. So, but they're talking about that devotion in which they do that, why they're doing that, why it's so beautiful, why it's so nice, because of their devotion. So all they're thinking of is the devotion of the devotees. So they're surrounded by that aspect. So to be on the same platform, then the devotee is surrounded by that same position with Krishna. He sees Krishna in that image. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. Otherwise, Krishna can't sit around and just see everything as himself. And because that's perfect, he's perfectly satisfied. But when the energy expands, so then he can look at it as the interaction of the devotee on that personal platform, that gives more pleasure. So that's what Krishna's offering. But because we're so used to secondary being our total focus, then it's hard to switch. So even we add Krishna, we're adding Krishna to our secondary focus. And that's how you begin the process. But it should be understood at some point the focus would be on the primary, and the secondary is simply, you know, being engaged as a matter of course. It's not that it's not done well and perfect, but it's not, you know, say, let's say like this. Okay, let us say somebody goes to medical school. Okay, they go to a good medical school. They do the internship in the best place, under the best people. Then they specialize in their, you know, like neural brain surgery or something, right? Under the best. And do that for a long time, right? And then they practice, and then they come up to be, they're now the renowned specialist. Okay, how long did that take? Quite a while. Now, if it comes up in a conversation, are they not proud of that, whatever it is, 20, 30 years? Of course, like that. Now, what happens if someone shows you something once and you know it perfectly? You know what I'm saying? So, where's the prestige? You understand? That's how it works in the spiritual world. All the different 64 arts and whatever it is that you need to know, someone will show you, but because there's no conditioning, there's no mode of ignorance, and one time you know it. You know, so it's not that, yeah, I put in that work, I put in the endeavor, see how good I got at. No, it's just you then just use it. So where did you get that knowledge? You got that from a devotee. So therefore, that connection with that devotee is there. You know, it's that the person put in 30 years, they don't think it's, yes, you know, it's just, you know, that associated with the medical industry and all that, and therefore I was at... Nobody talks like that. You know, it's like I'm the man. It's not like, you know, there's some connection, a personal aspect. You know, in other words, even the person they studied under, you know, did their internship and then their specialization under, it was just a stepping stone. It's not like they necessarily feel that personal... They might, but that's their own personal thing. But professionally, it's not needed or expected. So that's the difference, is that we have to see is, no, I'm doing this, rather than, no, I'm simply an assistant in this. And so then whatever's going to be the best assistant, that's what we do. Right? But we think, no, unless I do it, then I don't get the glory, I don't get the mercy, you know, all that kind of things. So it's a subtle point. Right? Subtle point. So that's what we're trying to get at, is that we're seeing everything as the Supreme Lord. Because it is. All it is that major words and major concepts that would be more easy or more appreciated because of that position of Jnana. You know what I'm saying? So that we're just defining those terms. So we're not even going into everything. We're just going into major, like in the Gita. When Krishna gives an explanation of the universal form, he mentions, I'll just mention major things.
Spark.
Huh? A spark of the splendor, yes. But he only mentioned major. No, the spark's the whole thing. And then of the spark, he only mentions major features. You know, like that. So and that's the whole point. For the Lord, that special, that kind of manifestation is not special to him. It's the interaction with the devotees. That's what's special. Because otherwise, the whole material universe is maintained by literally a spark of his splendor. Not just, okay, this universe or that aspect. All the whole Mahatattva, one quarter of the cosmos is maintained by a spark. Is that? Yeah. So we're trying to get to that aspect, that there's something beyond just the generic view of my mind, my intelligence, the logic, my attachments, my aspirations, all these different things, that there's this position beyond where one has a relationship with the Lord, that you can see the Lord in everything at all times. And then that interaction, that's special. So the secondary simply becomes a support of that. You know what I'm saying? So that's all. It doesn't have to be. One's not enamored by it. Is that what it's, yeah. Okay. Then the second thing. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.8, 32-33. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entities, the material energy, the spiritual energy, and the entire creation are all individual substances. In the ultimate analysis, however, together they constitute the Supreme One, the Personality of Godhead. Therefore, those who are advanced in spiritual knowledge see unity in diversity. For such advanced persons, the Lord's bodily decorations, His name, His fame, His attributes, and forms, and the weapons in his hands are manifestations of the strength of his potency. According to their elevated spiritual understanding, the omniscient Lord, who manifests various forms, is present everywhere. May he always protect us everywhere from all calamities. Right? So that's the aspect of his pervading into everything. Like that. And it means you can see, but it's not about the weapon. It's about him. And what is the nature of that potency that is being manifest? So in Vajra, then that all pervading. Okay. Footnote 48. In this verse from the Bhagavatam chapter entitled the Narayana Kavacha Shield, Srila Prabhupada describes a non-difference between the Lord and his weapons. As fire, although existing in one place, can expand its light and heat everywhere, so the omnipotent Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although situated in his spiritual abode, expands himself everywhere in both the material and spiritual worlds by his various energies, right? So we're reading this, and we'll just think, yeah, it's same old stuff that he's doing. But it's actually, you know, this is that point of the Vedanta Sutra, how what we were just discussing before. So that's the thing, is that on all levels, that's the perfection of devotional service and connected with the Lord. It functions at all levels. So, and each level is perfect, and then you have more perfect than that, more perfect than that. Since both cause and effect are the Supreme Lord, there's no difference between cause and effect. Consequently, the ornaments and weapons of the Lord, being expansions of a spiritual energy, are not different from him. There is no difference between the Lord and his various presented energies. This is also confirmed in the Padma Purana. Nama Chintamani Krishnas Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purnas Shudho Nitya Mukto Vinat Tvan Nama Nami Noho. The name, the holy name of the Lord is fully identical with the Lord, not partially. The word Purna means complete. The Lord is omnipotent and omniscient. And similarly, his name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia and everything pertaining to him are complete, pure, eternal, and free from material contamination. The prayer to the ornaments and carriers of the Lord is not false, for they are as good as the Lord, since the Lord is all-pervasive. He exists in everything, and everything exists in Him. Therefore, even worship of the Lord's weapons or ornaments has the same potency as worship of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.8.32-33. When you're doing you could say, I think he uses the term extended puja, like you're doing the Shaligram and these others, and there's more things that you can do than just the core aspects. So in Swadhyaya, I mean, it's not Swadhyaya? No, not in Swadhyaya. In pranam, in worship, in prayers to the Lord. Then you have all the concluding activities of the worship, right? You have the yoga before you start, the Purvanga Karmas, in which you purify everything in yourself and bring everything to that same transcendental level as the Lord. Right? Then you have the worship of the Lord with the 15 items. Then the 16th item, that's actually the conclusion of the whole process. So that includes things like taking Charanamrita, circumambulating the deities, all these aspects. So, in there, after worshiping the Lord, then one of the aspects is worshiping the Lord's weapons. So you worship all the 8 weapons of the Lord. I mean, he's got more, but you know, these are the main ones. So that's part of the worship. So you're worshiping him through worshiping his weapons. Does that make sense? So the important point here that we're bringing out is that non-difference with the Lord. Right? We're not bringing out the aspect of the Vajra itself, you know, as the weapon, as the thunderbolt. We're bringing out the Vajra's non-difference from the Lord. So therefore it is the Lord. So in the context of the explanation, then what we're explaining is the Lord, not the thunderbolt, just as a thunderbolt, what a thunderbolt does. We're explaining it as the Lord. That's what makes the world fearful. Does that make sense? Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.12.10. O King Indra, as a wooden doll that looks like a woman, or as an animal made of grass and leaves, cannot move or dance independently, but depends fully on the person who handles it. All of us dance according to the desire of the Supreme Controller, the Personality of Godhead. No one is independent. And 6.12.8. All living beings and all the planets of this universe, including the presiding deities of all the planets, are fully under the control of the Lord. They work like birds caught in a net, who cannot move independently. So that's what we're bringing out, is that connection with the Lord, that oneness with the Lord. Because that's the point, is that intellectually means we're trying to break into this using the intellectual process so that we're open to this. Because otherwise we use this oneness, but only for our own material attachments. Right? Let us say, okay, there's a family member has a room in the house, right? They live there, set up the way they set it up, and all this and that, right? And then there's so many interactions with that person in the room, right? They're out for something, you know, been out for some time, so there's some feeling one's missing the person. What's the experience when you go into their room? That's the whole point. That's what we're indicating here. Right? So Vedanta Sutra is bringing out that mechanical, intellectual approach to that. But the point is when we understand that there's there and there's a higher one, then we'll give up the lower one. So what we're trying to do is replace how we deal on the personal platform with our attachments with that same thing in connection with the Lord. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to shift it. But otherwise, we'll just say, yes, this is normal, and then there's all, yeah, I chant, and I circumambulate Tulsi, and I do all these different things like that. And then, you know, I have my normal life. But you have to realize that, so what's going on in the normal life, right? Let's say, you know, typical aspect, the guys at work. Okay, what's this soulless at work?
Break.
Okay, yeah, this. Huh? The family. Bachelors. That's another thing. Oh, maybe you're going into that. It's more subtle. So form a realized platform here. Yeah, okay, coming from last life. Okay, yeah. What does he think of work? Wow, finally. You know? But the boss always harasses you. Oh, that's nothing. I'm good. Yeah, no. It's the family. So, in other words, he sees that work as part of something he's doing for the family. All the difficulties he goes through, that's for the family. So that's the thing. It pervades everything. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. The members of the family, if they have good relationships, they see everything they're doing in connection with their position in the family and the relationship with the family members. So the greater the attachment, the greater that's there. Right? And so since that's very rare, therefore, you know, out of, how you say, 7 billion people on the planet right now, right? So that means, and each person, you know, there's tons of things going on every day. You know? Take that tons times 7 billion. And then take that back, you know, take it back every decade. You know, it's kind of like some of the, how you say, players in the world stage are changing. Either they're being introduced, you know, as how you say, as what do you call it? You know, possibilities again, the MTV, you know, what do you call it? You know, how you say, breakout actor, you know, like that. Or, you know, then they're in the, you know, how you say, life achievement, and everyone's appreciating after the fact. Right? You know, what is that called? You know, that's it. And, you know, after you're dead, then they're posthumous, you know? Right? And so, like this. Now, okay, now if we go back 3,000 years, you know, if we want to keep in the context of the Western civilization, right, because our theater and all that comes from the Greeks and all that, okay, so then, you know, that 3,000, you know, and then you go back, you know, 10, so how much are we talking about, you know? So that means even in that 10, you know, that's 300 completely new situations. But we're talking about in the greater that every day all that's happening. Right? So this is just setting the stage. Okay? Now, how is it that it's so hard to find a theme to use for a story or a drama or something? Right? Because in that 3,000 years with millions of people doing millions of activities, very rare is it up to the point where it's so full that it's at this position we're talking about on the mundane platform. Right? If we say, okay, young romance, what's going to come to mind? Romeo and Juliet. Okay, that's one couple in 3,000 years. One. That's there also, right? You know, but the point is, you know, how many people did the guy write about? You know, and unfortunately, half of them end up dead, right? So, does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that it's hardly ever there. But with Krishna, every moment, with every devotee, in every situation, it's worthy. Right? That makes sense. That's the difference. That's what's being offered, is we can become part of that entourage rather than take this one here so seriously. Does that make sense? Yeah? No? Kind of? You see, what we're trying to do is we're trying to break into this higher appreciation. Or let's say, break into this appreciation of a higher understanding. It's the same thing that we always know, that it's always about Krishna and seeing Krishna everywhere and all that. It's not different. That's the point. Whatever stated in the Gita, that's all we're going to be discussing. But the levels of appreciation of it get deeper and deeper. That's what's going on with the Braja Bhaktas. Is that something? So that's why then in these things, it's not just a, okay, is this, as God, he is all these things. He is as a person, he's all. So we're just now taking the God part. But we see is that the Bhagavatam now, going into the 10th canto, is going to get into him as a person part. But it's the same principle. Is that something? Yeah. Okay. Sutra 1340. Jyotir darshanat. Jyotihi, effulgence, darshanat, because of seeing. The thunderbolt refers to Brahman because of contiguous passages describing the Lord as light and fire. Right? So it's the same thing, is that there's verses going, making a point in there describing the Lord. So just because there's a verse that describes the Lord in a different way than we're used to, that it's a different context. Because we see at this point it's about the Lord, that point's about the Lord, that means in between must be about the Lord.
Yes, we have put the point earlier, like light and fire are Krishna, Abrahman.
Yes. 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 So like that. That's the whole point, is that it's an ongoing in that same description that it'll have. Mm-hmm. That principle. Yeah. Sutra Prakashika. This sutra identifies textual proximity as evidence that the thunderbolt refers to the Supreme Brahman. The Vishayavakya is both preceded and followed by other passages which equate transcendental splendor or light and fire with Brahman. Therefore, it stands to reason that this present verse does the same. Right? That makes sense. I talk about, you know, you have this piece of bread like that, and then, you know, we have another piece of bread. Right? And then there's some cheese, there's some mustard, there's, you know, so many other things like that. So, what are we talking about?
Splendor.
Yeah. That's the point.
What's Vishayavakya here?
That one before.
The
thunderbolt one. So, in other words, where he's taking this verse itself at this point. But in that same before and after those passages, then it's describing the Lord in other aspects. So as we see is that what is the contextual aspects of the Vishayavakya in another place is the Vishayavakya here. So in other words, let's say there's 10 verses. So that's all describing one topic. The Supreme Lord, but from all the different aspects, as Akash, as fire, as light, as Vajra, as this and that. So, because there's things that one would naturally understand to be Brahman, then these more obscure ones are also understood as Brahman. Right? Because it matches. You know, you may have to look into other definitions and explanations than you're used to, but it does do that. So, let's say if we're dealing with, okay, we start off with verse 3. So then that's the point we're being made, because that's one that they take first, is most obvious. And so that one's argued in context of, you know, 1 and 7. You know? But then at some point, you're discussing like here, then 7, but you're giving that it's already been explained about, you know, 1, 3, and, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So... Sri Govindabhashya. Previous to the description of the thunderbolt, the following statement is found. Nayatra suryo bhati nachandrat tarake. He is not illuminated by the sun, the moon, or stars. Katha Upanishad 5:15. Later it is said, Bhayad asyagnis tapati. Fire burns out of fear of him. Katha Upanishad 6:3. In these two cases, Brahman is equated with light and fire. Thus, the statement between these two describing the thunderbolt must also refer to Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it means he is what makes them work. Right? He is why fire functions. So in the same way, as if fire is burning because of fear of that, so then all living in the universe is because of the Lord. But in this case, using the term thunderbolt. Does that make sense? So that's how it's... Yeah. Bhagavatam verse Rashmanas. The Supreme Lord is called Vajra because of his powerful effulgence. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.11.20. Right, so that's, so before it was because of his all-pervadingness, here it's because of his effulgence. You could say, but why the two? Why not one or the other? But the point is, the effulgence is all-pervading. Right? And what's all-pervading? You know, the Brahman, we say Brahman is all-pervading. When we say all-pervading, we mean Brahman. So what's all-pervading? His effulgence. Does that make sense? 6.11.20.
I was thinking Brahma Jyoti, that's what
it is. Yes, yes, yes. So that's his effulgence. So you can say either way. You can talk about it's the effulgence of the Lord, the all-pervading aspect of the Lord, the impersonal feature of all his qualities. You know, there's, because it's the Lord, you can give unlimited descriptions of this, of Brahman, just like a Paramatma or a Bhagavan. But the principle is Brahman. So whether you call, whether you're saying effulgence or whether you're bringing out the all-pervading, like, because here then it's talking about the effulgence. And then that verse from Brahmanda Purana, then that was Brahma Vaivarta, then that was about his all-pervasiveness. Oh, 6.11.20. O Indra, O King of Heaven, the thunderbolt you carry to kill me has been empowered by the prowess of Lord Vishnu and the strength of Dadichi's austerities. Since you have come here to kill me in accordance with Lord Vishnu's order, there is no doubt that I shall be killed by the release of your thunderbolt. Lord Vishnu has sided with you. Therefore, your victory, opulence, and all good qualities are assured. Right? Because it's the Lord. He's not saying it's because you're Indra, you're so fabulous. He's pointing out is that everything will be perfect for it because it's the Lord's order. It will be successful because of the Lord. But Indra's thinking, no, because I'm Indra and I'm doing this, therefore. That's why he threw his club. This is being stated after he threw his club. And it didn't work. So he's trying to inspire him to be a little more devotional and have more faith. Right? And stop thinking he's the doer and understand he's the instrument. So if he takes up the position of the instrument, then that full potency of the Lord is there. Then the success is there. Therefore, all opulence, all victory, all good qualities, everything. Yes? Yes. It's based on Brahman because one is energy and the other is energetic. So in other words, the material creation is based on Brahman because you're taking how means how you say you're sitting on the blanket for what reason? It's soft. Okay, so that softness, that quality. It's manifest through the material energy. So that blanket is made out of, you know, a particular proportion of earth, water, fire, air, ether. Right? And so, but it's manifesting softness. So where does that softness come from? It comes from the Lord. So that means Brahman is pervading it. That's why it manifests that. So the example is given, you have a field. From that field, all the different plants come up. And so they all have their unique variety. But if you study it, they're only made out of earth. So in the same way is that all the material energy is situated in Brahman because it's an energy of the Lord, so it's not different from the Lord. And its variety and potency is because of its being pervaded by the Lord. So that's the non-difference we're talking about here. But we're talking about this non-difference in connection with seeing everything personally as Krishna. Like that. We're not talking about non-difference, so we're trying to say it's all one and going to be impersonal. Right? We're talking about how using this you can see the person. You know, just like we're saying. Going into the relative's room, then you have that feeling of oneness because you see all, oh, that's their shoes and that's that, and we sat here and talked, and you know, that's That's what we're trying to get to. Always remember Krishna, never forget. So, in here then, it's because we're seeing things that we're the doer, we're the controller. We're trying to get rid of what makes us forget, is that focus on the secondary without seeing its connection to the primary. That makes us forget. What do? We take that secondary that we don't see in connection with Krishna and use it to do something for Krishna. So we're reversing the thing. But it still has that so many stages. Right? What you see is that those, the Braja Bhakti, Bhaktas, it's simultaneous. They're seeing of the thing and Krishna. So that's what we're trying to get to. Does that make sense? So one could say, oh, but this is all technical. This is Vedanta Sutra. And we're discussing a technical point. It means when we got into the Shudra, then we kind of dropped out of the philosophy. I mean, this context into the social aspect. And, you know, hey, who's the Shudra? You know, Shudra, huh? Ooh. You know what I mean? Yeah. Get out your binocular. Yeah, I think I see. Yeah. So... Yes, this. But the point is this is what's being explained. That's why for us, it's not a problem. That's what can't be expressed. That's the problem with the sahajas. They don't understand this. They think, oh, it's gyan. It doesn't have that taste of talking about the pastime. You know, Krishna's there and he's, you know, with all the gopis and smiling at this one and dancing. That, oh, isn't this so, you know, like that. But what they're looking at is the smiling and dancing, because they're thinking, when I smile and dance with women, then it's nice. So Krishna's smiling and dancing, you know, so then, hey, this is nice. Seeing a connection with Krishna. But it's not about Krishna. It's about he smiled, he danced with them, he did this with them. You know what I'm saying? So it's technically not the vision of the devotee. You understand? We're looking directly at it. You know, the devotee's there, but the devotee's just, you know, it's just a secondary aspect. It's not the primary, the love between them. So I'm seeing the interaction, the secondary aspect of their interaction. I'm not seeing the primary, which is the love. So by this refined explanations, then we can start to discriminate these differences. Right? And so it's like, you know, at this point we're thinking, okay, well, this is a little bit, you know, okay, I can kind of get a glimmer, but it's a little bit. If you go back a few years, we were just trying to catch that, you know, there's metaphysical. You know? Yeah, so the second canto, like this and that. So now we can see is, of course, you know, that part is there. Now it's that what we're getting into here. So that's why the acharyas have no problem writing these commentaries to all these different works and that, and doing that. And you will see it more in the Sandarbhas, because that's written for the devotees. Right? This is written to defeat the non-devotees. You know, so the devotees know how to discuss it and the non-devotees can appreciate it. But the same points, right? Because it's all the same thing. Does that make sense? Yeah. 10.3.24, yes. Sri Devaki said, "My dear Lord, there are different Vedas, some of which describe you as unperceivable through words and the mind. Yet you are the origin of the entire cosmic manifestation. You are Brahman, the greatest of everything, full of effulgence like the sun. You have no material cause. You are free from change and deviation, and you have no material desires. Thus, the Vedas say you are the substance." Right? So he doesn't have any desires for the secondary. Because material desire means I'm interested in the results of secondary endeavor. Right? So he doesn't have any of that. But you can say as no, but you know, the spiritual world is full of all this secondary aspect. But the point is it just gives an opportunity for the variety of expressions of love. Right? So Mother Yashoda has love for Krishna. She expresses that through a variety of engagements, and each of those engagements has variety. She makes ornaments for Krishna. So the variety of how she does the ornaments and the effort she makes, that's the thing that's interesting to Krishna. It's not about the ornament, but it doesn't mean that the ornament in Krishna's mind is not non-different. So when we take it that, oh, it doesn't matter, then we're taking it from the Sahajiya point of view. You know? That, you know, therefore, you know, it's just whatever pleases me, because that's what Sahajiyas do. They only read and sing and talk about what pleases them. Right? Or the impersonal, it's all one, so we make no discrimination. So you can see is that that's an improper application of that. But instead of seeing it in the primary, that it doesn't matter because it's the primary that's important. Yes?
So the Sahajiyas, because they don't study philosophy, and they always remain on the level of Jiva Rasa. They never go beyond that.
No.
But then for us, I was thinking, we start with Bhagavan aspect, and then we study Brahma and Paramatma, and then we come to the same Bhagavan aspect, but it's complete.
Yes, yes. Yes, means what we know that Bhagavan's there, that's our principle, but then by this, if we come to that platform of attachment to Krishna, then it's fine. But if not, means in other words, that attachment to Krishna means I'm always remembering Krishna, right? Because that attachment increases up to Purva Rag, so we're always remembering Krishna. Right? And then that position will bring us to Prema. So it'll take us from that neutral state to the positive, into prema. So that what's getting in the way of that?
We
get in the way, yeah. So somehow or another we can walk and be the cat at the same time. You know, like that. You know, so get distracted by the secondary. Talk about the cat and what did happen to that cat, you know? We haven't seen it for a while, right? You know, because it's too hot.
Thank God.
Right?
Huh?
Yeah.
There was a cat attacking.
Huh?
There was a cat attacking. So you ran away.
Oh, okay. We were talking about something else other than cats. Oh yes. So what's getting in the way is our interest in the secondary without the primary Krishna. So then, once we get that fundamental principle that it's about Krishna and we're convinced of that, and then by doing that, however much we adjust in our view and our endeavors that we see it and use it in connection with Krishna, then what's not done, this is one of the methods for removing that. It means the main's going to be engaging in devotional service, you know, the direct activities. But within these direct, then we can use this intellectual aspect to discriminate between what is spiritual and what's material, what is devotional and what's not. And is that? And then by that, then we can give those up, and then that allows us to be more attached to Krishna. Because what gets in the way of the attachment to Krishna is attachment to Maya. You reduce the attachment to Maya if you know about Krishna and are always in association with devotees hearing about Krishna, then that will naturally come. Right? Because it only comes in the association of devotees. Right? So that will happen. That's why for us we say Brahma Bhuta, but for the, you know, others we say liberation, because they'll only come up to that neutral state. They'll remove the specifics of their distraction, but they won't remove the distraction itself, which means an interest in things not connected to Krishna. So that if something's not connected to Krishna, it's called secondary. Right? So we learn to connect it to Krishna, because that's what they're doing in the spiritual world. Mother Yashoda, her love for Krishna and parental rasa is the primary. She expresses that through cooking, through Krishna, and so many other things. So that cooking for Krishna, then is the secondary aspect, because connected to Krishna, it's non-different. We don't make a distinction between Mother Yashoda's cooking for Krishna and her love for Krishna. But in the material world, then there is a difference between our cooking and whatever else we're doing. And then when we start to cook for Krishna, so then it becomes connected. But then if at any point, let's say some pride comes up or some other things comes up, then we're actually dealing with two things at once. The primary and then the secondary that's not primary. We're going to get the devotional benefit for having cooked for Krishna and all that. So any devotion that is there, that will be reciprocated. But at the same time, that anartha of being proud of being good at cooking, that's going to then cause a problem. So then it'll come up that, you know, you're such a good cook and this and that, then you're getting insulted for your cooking, or, you know, some, how you say, Philistine or Cretan, you know, doesn't appreciate the cooking. You know, stuff like, does that make sense? You know. So that kind of thing. And so then you feel bad and this and that, but I'm doing it for Krishna. How can Krishna allow this to happen? We allowed it to happen. Because if we're thinking of Krishna, it won't bother us. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. My time is up. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.